We'll go on to the next case of the day. 013576 Kickapoo Valley versus the U.S. Department of Transportation. Good morning, Mr. Jablonski.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Good morning.
Thank you. Good morning, judges.
Good morning.
My name is Frank Jablonski. I'm with Porter Jablonski & Associates. You probably have seen my partner, Steve Porter. I have with me Liz Parrish and Dave Ebert and a number who are on the steering committee of KDSA and a number of supporters from the southwestern part of Wisconsin and also from the Chicago area.
Well, good morning to one and all.
Your Honor, this case is about a couple of things. First of all, it's about alternatives and the obligation of the Department of Transportation and the federal defendants to present to the public and the other people who are looking over this project a reasonable range of alternatives at the point that a decision is going to be made. That's what the case is mostly about. What it is not about, it is not about a contrast between doing nothing and building the road that is currently partially under construction.
Could I ask you to tell me very specifically what it is precisely you're asking for at this point? Because I do understand from the record that the road is about half done and it may be finished by November, according to some website. I don't officially know that, but whatever. I mean, there is information in the briefs that it's about half done. Is it your request that it be undone and put back to its original position? Is it your request that it just stay half done? What do you want right now?
Okay, thank you, by the way, for providing KDSA with expedited consideration. What we're looking for at this point, if you look at the record, what we've got is we've got a very old, very deteriorated road which had in place a number of bridges that were dating back to 1927. As picturesque as those bridges were, they were not going to stay. And bridges, the replacement of bridges is expensive. What has been done in the valley is that the bridges have been constructed. And so those bridges are there. Those bridges were going to be replaced anyway. What remains to be done in the valley, the construction that we're looking to have halted while the Department of Transportation and the federal defendants and the state defendants are sent back to the drawing board, is we're looking to have halted the work that is contemplated for this year, which is basically the connecting work in between the bridges. And that there is a substantial amount of land and resources that remain to be protected. If you looked at our, and I'm sure that you did, our motion for expedited consideration because you granted it, there were a number of pictures there. And a lot of that, a lot of what you saw in those pictures is still left. And that's what we're trying to protect. We know that there is a situation on the ground. We know that money has been spent. We know that the bridges were going to be replaced. There is still an opportunity to save a lot of this valley. And the bridges were going to have to be replaced anyway. Perhaps not at the scale, but they would have had to have been replaced.
So right now, you want, recognizing that the bridge work, as you're saying, has been done, you've kind of, in light of that, changed or modified what you're looking for to an injunction, and you want DOT to go back to the drawing board and redo a whole new EIS, draft EIS, a new consideration of all these alternatives?
It is not that material to us whether it is called the draft EIS or a supplemental EIS. What we want the Department of Transportation to be required to do is to go back to the drawing board and to develop a reasonable range of alternatives, assuming that those bridges are going to stay, in terms of the land that remains. And that's why we have sought expedited consideration. We're not looking to have $10 million worth of work torn out. We are looking to have the land that remains protected, and that land can still be protected.
But if we look at the draft EIS, then why shouldn't we look at the other draft EIS that does have a great range of alternatives discussed in it? And then, the final EIS, in the case as it presently stands, narrowed it down to a smaller number. And I recognize your argument that some of them weren't really realistic in light of the federal legislation that had been passed. But in any event, if the draft and the final are a package, why hasn't the Department of Transportation, along with the state agencies, already done enough?
They haven't done enough because they did not bring forward for consideration a reasonable range of alternatives, and that became particularly true after the passage of the Water Resources Development Act in 1996. If you look at the draft environmental impact statement, they state specifically and explicitly that if the dam that had been previously planned for the Kickapoo Valley is not going to be constructed, any of these alternatives are feasible. They're all feasible. Now, the requirement under the National Environmental Policy Act is that you have to take the alternatives or reasonable range of alternatives, and you have to look at those in light of the environmental laws and policies that are in play. And the environmental laws and policies that are in play here are, first of all, the Water Resources Development Act's explicit requirement that the land shall be preserved in a natural state and developed, quote, only to the extent necessary to enhance outdoor educational and recreational activities.
But that's the same statute that says, but build the highway, right? In
that is the same
with
statute.
Design memorandum number six.
Exactly. That is the same statute that says build the highway. And there are three important parts of that statute. One, there's an absolute requirement which uses the word shall, in contradistinction with other words that are used in the statute, which says that it shall be preserved and developed only to the extent necessary to enhance outdoor educational and recreational purposes. There is a requirement that the road shall be constructed generally along the existing right-of-way. And they use the word with respect to design memorandum number six, they use the word substantially. So there is substantially, there is generally, and then there is the word shall. And the word shall is used in restricting the road so that it is to enhance outdoor educational and recreational purposes. And so I think that argument just basically makes itself.
You know, in part, your argument seems to depend on the notion that some of the articulated goals of the highway project, such as bringing highway 131 up to arterial standards, are not valid. Am I right so far?
The articulated goal of bringing that goal is not valid in light of WERDA. That is not the only goal in light of WERDA. And in addition to that, there is flexibility. The Federal Highway Administration wrote the book on flexibility in highway design, and they established in that book that we have a lot of leeway in terms of what we can do in certain circumstances in order to protect environmental resources and still construct the road. There's a whole series of parameters that they are allowed to vary. They're allowed to vary the curve. They are allowed to vary the design speed. They are allowed to vary the shoulders. They're allowed to do lots of things. On the picture on the front, what we see is a road that goes through a beautiful area, and it's twisty and windy. It has a nice guardrail on it. It does not have substantial shoulders, and that kind of road is acceptable. It's acceptable to the Federal Highway Administration, and I would point out that flexibility in highway design applies to roads that are a couple of degrees higher than this minor arterial in the federal system.
Reading their brief, it sounds to me like they say, in fact, they already have employed a fair amount of that flexibility that you're referring to, since they have not proposed to complete this project all the way up to, let's say, the most standard arterial things. They say there are these 45-mile-an-hour zones, and they have this list of deviations that they built in as a result of the environmental study. The risk always with a NEPA case is that there's an urge to make it a substantive limitation on what the federal government does, as opposed to a procedural set of requirements. And it's only a procedural law, right?
There is not only procedural law at issue here.
Well, I know that the other statutes, but in terms of NEPA at least, it looks to me like they studied a lot of things. Now, if your principal argument is that it's WERDA that has been violated, there you have to, you were just addressing the argument whether one can reconcile the environmental language in WERDA with the language about constructing a highway.
There's also 4F, and there's a critical issue here on section 4F. And the the lease that was in place from the Army Corps of Engineers to the state of Wisconsin at the time that the final environmental impact statement was issued said that this land is being leased only for public park and recreational purposes. There are letters from the Department of the Interior which indicate that they believe that the Kickapoo Reserve, which includes the Kickapoo River National Natural Landmark, that that land is Section 4F. Now, every agency likes to flex its muscle. Every agency likes to be able to define things so that they can do, so that they can pursue what they see as their mission. But it is a legal question as to whether this land should have been recognized as being 4F. And it's a legal question that I think is resolved entirely in favor of KVFA. They talk about, one of the things that they talk about is that there's some agricultural land within the Kickapoo Reserve. That agricultural land is not close to recreational purposes. One of the recreational purposes specifically identified in the statute and in the rules that have been issued by the state of Wisconsin is hunting. You can hunt on that land. Now, horse riding trails that go near that land. There's cross-country skiing. There's snowmobiling throughout this entire area. And
do you have other cases where mixed-use land has been recognized under 4F?
Yes. I admit.
Because I understood that they can answer this, too. I understood the government to be arguing that mixed-use areas were not qualified for 4F designation, which is why they didn't do it for most of the land here.
The designation, okay. I have not found a case on that talks about mixed use. I haven't seen, and they also call it, quote, they come up with this term that I've been unable to find in any case law, where they call it open land, and it's open land and therefore it's not recreational. It certainly is recreational. It's recreational under WERDA, it's recreational under the state law, it's recreational under the state regulations, it's recreational under the lease from the Army Corps of Engineers, and it's recreational under the, and it's meant for preservation under the National Natural Landmark guidelines. And in addition to that, some of its wildlife refuge. If you review the expedited consideration request and its attached pictures, there are signs right there where the road's going to go through wildlife refuge. It's 4F land, and the issue is
usually the case with 4F areas that the government agency would have a no build option.
In any EIS situation, they do have a no-build option. And in a 4F situation,
but they don't really have that here because of WERDA.
That's right. They don't have a no-build option because of WERDA. They have to do something. WERDA requires them to reconstruct the road generally along the existing right-of-way. It doesn't mandate the creation of this road. I mean, in the EIS, at the time of the final EIS, there were only four alternatives that were available. And there were only four alternatives that were presented to the natural resource agencies and to the public. Two of those alternatives were illegal under WERDA, completely illegal because they relocated the road entirely off the existing right-of-way. It only crossed the existing right-of-way at the beginning and at the end where it happened to intersect them. So what was left? Doing nothing and doing what they wanted to do anyway. That's not a reasonable range of alternatives under NEPA. And it didn't present to the public and didn't bring forward to the public the range of alternatives that should have been brought forward to the public.
Did you comment on the draft statement, though? I thought there were some 20 pages or so of responses to comments your organization had made earlier.
It's true. There are a lot of responses to comments to comments that KVSA has made. However, they weren't, in many ways, they weren't salient. For example, let's just talk about alternative 2C, which was addressed in the draft environmental impact statement. In the draft environmental impact statement, 2C was an alternative which was eliminated from further consideration for the specific reason that it didn't address changes to another road, State Highway 33, in the area. All right? By the time of the final environmental, now first of all, the only reason that it didn't address Highway 33 is because that's the way they drew it up. So they drew it up so that it didn't address Highway 33, and then they threw it out because it didn't address Highway 33. By the time of the final environmental impact statement, the Highway 33 segment, which, by the way, is windier and twistier than State Highway 131. The Highway 33 segment had been was out the window from all alternatives, so that should have been considered. In addition to that, at the time, in the interim between the draft environmental impact statement and the final environmental impact statement, the agency, when it thought that it was not going to be able to come up with the money to build a grander road project, had a meeting in Madison where they had to plead their case, and they said that, well, what we have to do is we have to, there's a fact to the consultant, and they said what we have to do is we have to come up with an alternative that's kind of a mix of 2A, which is replacing the bridges, and 2F, which is what they say is their preferred alternative, although it also kind of looks like 2B. But they said that we have to do that, and we're going to call it 2G. Now, why wasn't 2G brought forward? Why wasn't it developed and brought forward to the public? In addition to that, in private conferences between the Department of Natural Resources of Wisconsin and the Department of Transportation in the state of Wisconsin, they developed what they agreed, according to their emails, they settled on a 45 mile per hour agreement. And they talked about there's an email in which the Department of Transportation is talking about a conversation with Congressman Gunderson's office where they're talking about the 45 mile an hour plan, building a road which is intended to enhance ecotourism instead of being a road to move people and goods throughout the region. Now, a road to enhance ecotourism and to enhance the use of that area, that sounds a real lot to me like what WERDA had in mind when they're talking about a road use of the land only to the extent necessary to enhance outdoor educational and recreational purposes. However, that 45 mile an hour alternative, which was developed in 1994 and which was settled upon privately for a while between the agencies as the lead candidate, was never even brought forward to the public. A small citizen.
When you say that several times now. You mean only that the final environmental impact statement didn't discuss that? Because it does seem to me that there was a lot of input from the public, including your organization, about the broader set of alternatives that the draft statement had discussed. It's not like it was a secret. I mean, you knew what was going on, didn't you?
No, we didn't. We didn't know about those discussions until we
used the draft EIS?
We saw the draft environmental impact statement, but we were never aware.
You're never going to be aware of every phone conversation within an agency.
And how would you respond to the argument that we should consider the draft and final environmental impact statement as one integrated statement rather than isolating?
Well, you should. Statement
and saying that they only, considered those alternatives.
You should consider it as one. However, in the draft environmental impact statement, there were alternatives, all of which they stated explicitly were feasible. And that's one of the criteria, is feasibility under Section 4F. If it's feasible and prudent, then you've got to do it. And they did not study, develop, and describe those. They threw them out for reasons that are utterly specious, such as the reasons that I gave you about 2C. I've got my white light. I believe that
sure.
I have to reserve my time. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. All right, Mr. Remington.
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Frank Remington. I'm the Assistant Attorney General for the state of Wisconsin. Also appearing at council table is Stephen O'Connor, Assistant United States Attorney for the Western District of Wisconsin. I'll be presenting the argument on behalf of the government, the state of Wisconsin, and the United States government. I had, in light of the court's questions, I sort of threw off the outline that I was going to present. I want to start with describing what we have before the project, which is before the court. Essentially, you've got a bucolic corner of the state of Wisconsin in the Driftless area, a beautiful place, no question about it. The road, Highway 131, owes its origin, by best guess, to a combination of 1920s wagon trail of some kind. It predates engineering records in the Wisconsin Department of Transportation. That's predominantly what existed from 1920 to the 1970s, when the grand plan to create the Kickapoo Dam arose. And when that plan arose, this entire valley was going to be inundated with floodwaters. And from 1970, pretty much on, nothing was done on the highway, which was going to be buried beneath a wall of water. In the early 1990s, it became apparent to the Wisconsin Department of Transportation, which is charged with protecting the safety of the traveling public, that the dam was not going to be built, and that something had to be done with Highway 131. The process was begun to make plans with what to do in the Kickapoo Valley. That culminated in a draft EIS in 1992, and as the court is aware, the draft EIS contains numerous options. I think the number is 17 options, ranging from options that created the road if the dam was going to be built outside the valley to an option of doing nothing. In 1996, the Water Resources Development Act was passed. Now, the Water Resources Development Act was passed, and it did a couple of profound things. It essentially said the dam's not going to be built, that the property, which was acquired from the private property, which was acquired to build the dam and the impoundment, was going to be returned to the state of Wisconsin and the Ho-Chunk Nation, and predominantly to those two groups.
While we're on the subject of WERDA, what I don't understand is, here's a statute that certainly has at least two goals in it. Obviously, there are more things in the statute than this, but preserving the environment and somehow doing something about this road, you know, keeping the road there and reconstructing it. But the plan that's brought forward, that's pretty much, you know, as your opponent argues anyway, the only realistic plan that can somehow thread this needle of what's available to you under WERDA, requires, if I remember the record correctly, the acquisition of 85 additional acres, which is an awful lot of land for this little tiny road stretch. Is it much more than 6 miles, or maybe 5.9 miles or so?
That is what they say in their brief, but I think the numbers can be deceptive, and let me refine those. Now, the project is bigger than the Kickapoo Valley Reserve. So the amount of land for the project is going to be greater than the amount of land in the Kickapoo Valley Reserve.
So do you mean greater for this 5.9-mile segment of road, that there's really like a 20-mile segment of road out there somewhere, or is it 85 acres over the 5.9?
Correct. Only 46.9 acres were going to be acquired in the Kickapoo Valley Reserve. So you start with the larger number and you say,
so what percentage is that?
I went to law school in part because my math skills weren't too good, Your Honor. But that approximately 46.9 acres is itself needs to be refined, Your Honor. 6 acres are going to be restored. 6 acres of the road that's no longer going to be there are going to be ripped up and seeded over. So you deduct, you've got 40 acres in reserve. And approximately 4.37 acres is a temporary, that is, you need it for highway construction. So you're approximately down to 36 acres in the Kickapoo Valley Reserve needed to build the highway. Now that in and of itself doesn't tell the whole story, Your Honor, because that is right-of-way. And I don't know if the highway cases aren't the most stimulating, but the language is somewhat technical. Right-of-way is the term which describes from the property line to the property line, and that's more than the paved surfaces. The paved surfaces of the new road under the standard arterial design are going to be 12-foot width lanes. So when you talk about 36 acres in the reserve, that's from the paved shoulder for bicycles all the way up the grass embankment. So it's not to say that you have 36 acres are going to be paved over in the Kickapoo Valley Reserve. In fact, the details are approximately 14.6 acres will be paved over in the Kickapoo Valley Reserve, as opposed to the old road, which had 8.5 acres. So you're right. There are going to be more paved acres in the Kickapoo Valley Reserve, but not 86 acres. Approximately a change of 6 acres of pavement are going to be added in the Kickapoo Valley Reserve.
And that's just part of straightening out these curves?
Straightening out the curves, right. Paving the shoulders for bicycles and pedestrians. Back to the Water Resource Development Act. It did three things. It returned the land to the state of Wisconsin. It also said that you need to rebuild the road. And you need to rebuild the road in accordance with Design Memorandum Number 6. Now, Design Memorandum Number 6 is itself a memorandum that goes back to the 1970s, which was first drafted to plan a road around the reserve. And that, in 1970s, was a design memorandum that talked about building it up to not 45, not 55, but 60 to 65 mile an hour speed limits. I think the term is for rural trunk highways. And so Design Memorandum Number 6, which was going to skirt the valley under the Act, was now saying to the state of Wisconsin and the federal highways, you're going to put this right down in the bottom of the valley. But there is some flexibility as the parties that boast of the knowledge. But these people who drafted the design or designed the road needed to accommodate that. It also said you need to substantially follow the old right-of-way. Now, what did the highway designers do? It tried to meet those two obligations, to follow the old right-of-way, which the record shows deviates from the new road deviates from the old right-of-way, only 24%. You had to substantially follow the old right-of-way, but you had to bring it up to design standard for rural trunk highways. The preferred option is what the government contends is the best effort to meet those two obligations and yet build the road.
Let me ask you this question. Going from 17 options in the draft EIS down to 4 is a big cut. Is there a place where there's an explanation about why the 13 got ditched? You know, is there some place where we can get some understanding? Because it seems to me that is part of the NEPA process, to see what it is that's causing you to zero in on certain options.
There are, I guess I would say, 3 principal places to look, Your Honor. Is one in the draft environmental impact statement itself, which contains a discussion of the various options, including what arises out of the draft process, the preferred option. Number 2, in the government, attached to the government's brief, the environmental re-evaluation. In 1998, after Werder was passed in 96,
right,
the government said we need to reevaluate, time has passed.
Right.
And in 1998, specifically in light of the 1996 legislation, the Federal Highways reevaluated the draft environmental impact statement once again. And then lastly, Your Honor, the final environmental impact statement itself talks about the alternatives, but it also talks about the final environmental impact statement being an organic document which encompasses by reference the draft environmental impact statement. So as the court inquired of the appellants, I should respond that NEPA is a process which this court reviews to determine whether the government took a hard look at things. And I submit the record amply demonstrates not just a hard look at the question of what to do from Rockton to Ontario in this part of Wisconsin, but it took an exhaustive look. Now, it took a look and came to a conclusion that some people aren't happy with. And that happens in any type of government project. And that's unfortunate that it wasn't a choice that pleased everybody, but that's what happened. Did they take a hard look? Absolutely. Did they come to the conclusion that the appellants want? Apparently not. Did they endeavor to comply with the alternative competing goals of WERDA? Yes, they did. Did they generally follow the right-of-way? Yes, they did. Did they respect the integrity of the valley? You talk to engineers, and absolutely they say they did. But what they were doing, Your Honor, is trying to bring this road up to arterial standards for rural trunk highways as the Act requires. Now,
and in getting back to Judge Wood's question, is there anywhere where the rejection of all those reasons is detailed and spelled out?
To my knowledge, not precisely in one document. I think the answer to the question begins with the draft environmental impact statement. It's picked up again in the supplemental environmental re-evaluation.
Isn't there a danger that the stated goals of the project have been manipulated in such a way as to preclude alternative with less deleterious impact on the surrounding environment when we can't see precisely how all of this has come about?
In the abstract, that may be a valid point. In this case, the answer is no.
But are we to take that on blind faith?
No, absolutely not. And the reason why I answer that no is you do not have a decision under review that presents a specific, detailed alternative that's cast in stone. In highway construction, the final design is not finished until the last day of the project, because certain situations arise which may call for some flexibility. And so when the preferred alternative was passed, the preferred alternative is itself a misnomer to suggest it's 55 mile an hour speed limit. First of all, remember that memorandum number 6 was 65. They went to 55. And then in the process of building the road, as detailed in the government's brief, the design modifications brought down approximately half of the project to 45 mile an hour standard. And what did they do? They made the hills steeper. They made the side cuts sharper. They made the curves tighter than what it would be required for truly a 55 mile an hour standard. So when you say, is there a place that says I'm rejecting the 45 as opposed to the 55, it's not that simple. What they said is we respect the position of KVSA and others that was thoroughly involved in the process to protect these competing goals in the Kickapoo Valley. And we're going to go by following the existing right-of-way, trying to implement design memorandum number 6, but making significant substantial deviations. And those deviations were outlined. And so it's not that they rejected a 45-mile-an-hour design. They adopted a 45-mile design by incorporating the modifications in the final plan. So I guess it's not very satisfactory to say it's not that simple to suggest you had a finite, discrete, encapsulated, specific choices to be made. It was general choices to be made from which then design modifications. So what I'm trying to say, Your Honors, is that yes, the preferred alternative was a 55 mile an hour design in title only, but in reality, it's a 45 mile an hour design. The bridge design is a good example. These are not standard bridges. They're slab span bridges which bring the bottom up higher to accommodate the floodwaters underneath and lower the profile. So design, final design, attempts to accommodate those competing concerns in the final construction. Let me go
so
to...
So are you saying that when these modifications are made, that some of these modifications indeed took into account some of the alternatives that were proposed in the draft EIS? And so that's how we're to discern whether or not those were taken into account. You know, when you run into, quote, like a bump in the road and you have to make some decision, they go back and they look at some of those alternatives that were suggested in the draft EIS, or that the draft EIS rejected?
I think the answer is yes. I think the answer is that when the final decision was made, it didn't end so much as say we're going to build a 55-mile-an-hour road, because that's the record demonstrates was not the decision. The final design adopts portions of the other competing alternatives in the final design. So they went around particularly important escarpments. There are these land bridges. You'll see some reference to land bridge. Well, a land bridge is a bridge not over water but over land. Instead of leveling the hills and filling the valleys, they built these large bridges over the valley to accommodate some of the concerns for protecting the integrity of the environment. Now, is that in design memorandum number 6? Well, the answer is no. The land bridge isn't there, but the organic process of building this road to accommodate the varying needs in the Kickapoo Valley Reserve was done in cooperation and consultation with a number of parties, which ended up in a final design that brought together, in the government's opinion, some of the best parts, although not all the parts, but some of the best parts of what people wanted to see done there. The first question was, what does the appellant want in this case? The bridges are gone. The new bridges are in, but bear in mind, Your Honor, they're not aligned like the old bridges. They're aligned to accommodate the new right-of-way. So I caution to suggest that you can simply then connect the dots between the ends of the bridges to the next bridge. There are bridges built where the old right-of-way wasn't. I think the Winchell Valley land bridge, one of the land bridges that's being built, it's totally separate and apart from where the old highway right-of-way is.
And construction's underway right now? Has the construction season started, or are you waiting?
Oh, with a bang, Your Honor.
Yeah, it's underway. Okay.
I was out there last Thursday, and approximately, I believe, it's a fair statement to say all the land within the Kickapoo Valley Reserve has been either rutted over, or the valleys are starting to be filled and the hills starting to be leveled. The new right-of-way is being built. I don't know, as I sit here today, is if you were to ask me how we could put it back. In fact, I asked the engineer that as possible one consequence of the court's action in light of their request, and the engineer looked at me like I was from another planet. I'm not sure, although that's a question ultimately a fact on remand, that it could ever be done without considerably more environmental damage. So I don't think that's a remedy for the court here to consider at all. I think the question is before the court. Did the government take a hard look at what to do in this valley? And I submit that the record amply demonstrates, without the argument of counsel or the briefs to aid the court, the record that the court has amply demonstrates that the government took a hard look at what to do in this valley, with the competing concerns, including the active and thought-provoking participation of the Kickapoo Valley Stewardship Association.
If we were to drive out there, could we tell all this?
Well, first you'd get stuck. could you tell all this? You could tell that it was a road being, in my opinion, it was a road being built sensitive to the unique environmental concern. It's not the way the appellants want it to be built. But the bridge is a small, insignificant point, but yet important, is the bridges have these form liners which make them look like stone bridges. The other point that I want to bring back is they talk about what the competing uses, the uses of the Kickapoo Valley Reserve. One of the uses is to provide arterial freeway traffic from Interstate 90 in Tacoma down to the Wisconsin River. It also is to bring people into the Kickapoo Valley, into Wildcat Mountain State Park, safely and efficiently. I think, Your Honor, that the record demonstrates, as I indicated, that the government did the right thing here. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Remington. And Mr. Jablonski has
a minute and a half.
Thank you, Your Honor. I wanted to briefly address the issue of WERDA, because with the passage of WERDA, the public agencies did go back and did do a reevaluation. But what they should have done at that evaluation point is they should have looked at WERDA and said, look, two of the alternatives out of the four that we have brought forward are now illegal. They're now illegal. And nonetheless, and I think that this goes to the question of bad faith, which we argued below, and which we point to the emails and the internal information, it's the question of whether you can, at the decision point, at the point that you're going to assemble a record of decision under NEPA, whether you can really have only two alternatives, because two are illegal. There's no discussion about that. And that simply is not sufficient under the National Environmental Policy Act. Design Memorandum Number 6, it's true, was constructed for a 1970s-type road. I would point out to the court that this was going to be a recreational area of a different type at that time. And if design and had it come down to the final design, Section 4F would have applied there as well. We also have flexibility in highway design book that the appellees wrote the book about. I wish that you could come out to the valley. It's true that the valley has been wounded. However, our men and women who are fighting for us have a principle that they try to keep with, and that's that we don't leave our wounded behind. As officers of the Constitution, as people who are sworn to uphold the law, I think that it is your duty to not leave that wounded land behind. It can't be restored to the land that has been scraped and filled cannot be restored to exactly what it was, but it can be remediated to purposes that are consistent with the Water Resources Development Act and that enhance outdoor educational and recreational purposes.
Finish your thought.
Thank you, Your Honor. With respect to safety, I would ask that you look at the Department of Natural Resources letter. I think that it is common knowledge that safety is impaired when you mix high-speed traffic with low-speed traffic, and that is exactly what this road is going to do. We're not talking about not fixing the hairpin curve. We want the hairpin curve fixed. But if you start putting in 55-mile-an-hour trucks with Winnebagos and campers and bicyclists and people hauling canoes, we think that there's going to be a safety problem there. And that's the kind of safety problem that the Department of Transportation often looks at, because when you mix the speeds and mix the uses, that's when you're going to get trouble. Any benefit to this valley, educational and outdoor educational and recreational purposes that are created by this road, is only an afterthought. It's only incidental to the road that they wanted to construct from the very beginning anyway. I think that the full record shows that, and that's why at the point of decision there were only two alternatives. Thank you.
Wow. Well, thank you so much, Mr. Savansky, Mr. Remington. The court appreciates your fine arguments, and the case will be taken under advisement.